Section 4, The Me Decade, Life in the 1970s. An American Story. As the United States prepared to celebrate its bicentennial on July 4, 1976, a reporter asked Stoyan Christo for his views on the state of the nation on the eve of its 200th birthday. The 77-year-old Vermont resident acknowledged that the United States was in pretty bad shape, but added that the country would turn around, as it always had. "I believe in this country. I've always believed in it." There is a quotation by Benjamin Franklin in a letter to George Washington during the Revolutionary War. Franklin talked of a cornfield during a drought and how the corn stalks have shriveled and curled, and it was a sad sight. And then he said a thunderstorm came along, spilling rain, and a day or two after the sun came out, and the corn came to life, and it was a delight. "I know we're going through a kind of turmoil now, but the country is okay. My faith in this country was never shaken. Like that cornfield, the sun will shine again, and the rains will come, and brother, those corn stalks will revive, and it will be a beautiful sight." Quoted in Newsweek, July 4, 1976. The Search for Fulfillment. Like Stoyan Christo, many Americans in the 1970s believed that the United States would eventually move beyond the Watergate scandal, the Vietnam War, and the country's nagging economic problems. In the meantime, some Americans sought ways to get on with their daily lives. As a way of coping with anxious times, they sought escape, laughter, and fulfillment in a wide range of fads, entertainment, and spiritual movements. Writer Tom Wolfe labeled the 1970s the Me Decade, referring to the idea that many Americans grew more self-obsessed in this decade as they strove for greater individual satisfaction. Indeed, the most popular books of the period included such titles as I'm Okay, You're Okay, How to Be Your Own Best Friend, and Looking Out for Number One. Journalist Richard Michael Levine argued that in light of the growing feelings of despair and cynicism about American society, it was little wonder that many people turned inward. In the damp, late autumn of 1973, it did not take a religious fanatic in a tattered overcoat to sense that the real kingdom lay within, things being as rotten as they were without, he wrote. In their quest for self-improvement, many Americans were willing to embrace new movements. The New Age movement. Disenchanted with the conventional religions of their parents, some young men and women sought fulfillment through the host of secular movements and activities that made up the New Age movement. New Age enthusiasts embraced the idea that people were responsible for and capable of everything from self-healing to creating the world. They believed spiritual enlightenment could be found in common practices, not just in traditional church-going. They tried activities such as yoga, martial arts, and chanting to achieve fuller spiritual awareness. Kathy Smith, a college student during the 1970s, recalled how she and others claimed to find Zen, or enlightenment, in running and other physical activities. They were beginning to understand how exercise affects your soul, how it affects your being. People starting getting in the Zen of things. The Zen of tennis, the Zen of working out, the Zen of motorcycle repair, the Zen of running. I, like many others, started connecting physical activity to the spiritual side. People also started looking at yoga and Tai Chi, and not only the stretching aspects of these disciplines, but the mental aspects. Now they were working the body, the mind, and the spirit. Quoted in The Century. The New Age movement took many different paths to transform individuals and society. Some New Agers extolled the power of crystals and gemstones to improve life. Others touted astrology. Some were inspired by the Eastern belief in reincarnation, which taught that people could be reborn many times until reaching perfection. Awareness of former lives was supposed to bring knowledge of the true inner self. Transcendental Meditation. Many Americans who were dissatisfied with established religions sought new religions. A number of these new religions originated in Asia and centered on the teachings of gurus or mystical leaders. One of the more well-known gurus was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. A native of India, Maharishi moved to the United States in 1959, where he led a spiritual movement known as Transcendental Meditation. Maharishi worked in relative obscurity until 1967, when the wildly popular rock group The Beatles began to explore his teachings. Their attention brought an American following. Transcendental Meditation suggested daily meditation and the silent repetition of spiritual mantras as a way of achieving peak intelligence, harmony, and health. If all the people on earth practiced Transcendental Meditation, its advocates believed, the world would enjoy peace. Changing Families. The search for fulfillment had an impact on many American families. The campaigns of the era, especially the women's movement, began to change how many women viewed their roles as wives and mothers. By 1970, 60% of women between the ages of 16 and 24 had joined the labor force. Between 1970 and 1980, women aged 25 to 34 had the largest annual percentage growth in the workforce. These changes, in turn, led to changes in family life. With women increasingly active outside the home, smaller families became the norm. The birth rate fell to an all-time low in 1976, and parents and their children began spending less time together. A greater number of families also split apart, as the divorce rate doubled from 2.5 divorces per 1,000 people in 1966 to 5 per 1,000 10 years later. Reading check. Summarizing. What were the basic beliefs of the New Age movement? Cultural trends in the 1970s. Popular culture in the 1970s reflected many of the changes taking place in society. Television now sometimes portrayed women in independent roles or took on formerly taboo subjects such as racism, poverty, and abortion. Meanwhile, Americans listened and danced to new forms of music and sought fun and escape in a variety of new fads. Turning point. Television in the 1970s. The decade opened with a revolutionary new situation comedy on Saturday nights. Unlike earlier sitcoms, The Mary Tyler Moore Show featured an unmarried woman with a meaningful career at its center. Actress Mary Tyler Moore played the main character, Mary Richards, who had left a small town for a big city job as a television news producer. Mary sparred with her gruff but caring boss, despaired over the shallowness of the blow-dried news announcer, and had adventures with friends. Mary also went on dates but never got around to marrying. The debut of the sitcom All in the Family in January 1971 marked an even bigger turning point in television programming. The show took risks by confronting potentially volatile social issues and by featuring a controversial hero, the blue-collar and bigoted Archie Bunker. Archie called his wife Edith Dingbat and his liberal son-in-law Meathead. He also mocked his feminist daughter and various ethnic groups. Though Archie prided himself on being the man of the house, he never won any arguments with his liberal family or his African-American neighbors. By carefully mixing humor and sensitive issues, and by not preaching to its audience, All in the Family provided viewers with a way to examine their own feelings about issues such as racism. Producer Norman Lear claimed that the show holds a mirror up to our prejudices. We laugh now, swallowing just the littlest bit of truth about ourselves. Several years later, Archie Bunker's African-American neighbors became the stars of another television series, The Jeffersons. George Jefferson, like Archie, was opinionated and prejudiced, but ultimately likable. The Jeffersons portrayed African Americans in a new light, as successful and respected. Maude, another spin-off from All in the Family, featured Edith Bunker's feminist cousin, who had recently remarried after her third divorce. The strong-willed Maude did not need to depend on her new husband, Walter. This popular program drew intense controversy in 1972 when Maude made the difficult decision to have an abortion. Maude's African-American maid, Florida, generated another series in 1974. Starring Esther Rolle as Florida, Good Times portrayed an African-American family struggling to raise three children in a low-income housing development in Chicago. Music of the 1970s. The music of this period reflected the end of the 1960s youth and protest movements. The hard driving rock of the tumultuous 1960s gave way to softer sounds. The fading out of ear-numbing, mind-blowing acid rock, Time commented in 1971, is related to the softening of the youth revolution. The music became more reflective and less political, reflecting a desire to seek fulfillment from within. These days, nobody wants to hear songs that have a message, said a member of the rock group Chicago. Popular entertainers in tune with the new meditative atmosphere included singers Barry Manilow and John Denver and the bands ABBA and the Eagles. The 1970s also saw the rise of disco music. The disco craze of the later 1970s began in African-American and Latin nightclubs. There, disc jockeys played recorded dance music with a loud and persistent beat. The fast pace and easy rhythm attracted fans, but disco also seemed well-suited for the me generation. Unlike rock and roll, disco allowed the people dancing to it to assume greater prominence than the music. As the co-owner of a popular discotheque in New York described the phenomena, everybody secretly likes to be on center stage, and here we give them a huge space to do it all on. Gus Rodriguez, who had moved with his family from Puerto Rico to Brooklyn 20 years earlier, recalled going to discos with his friends in the mid-1970s. We would go to the discos several times a week, but the weekends were always the best. Getting ready to go out was sort of a ritual, especially on Saturdays. During the day, you would go buy that shirt or that belt or those platform shoes, all of which seemed incredibly important at the time. You had to have a particular type of look. And we all dressed the same way. We would call each other up to coordinate what color suits everybody was wearing. Who's wearing the powder blue suit? Who's wearing the white suit? Who's wearing this? Who's wearing that? And then we would carefully iron everything so it was just so. Quoted in The Century. Discomania reached its peak after the 1977 movie Saturday Night Fever. In the film, a middle-class Italian-American teenager played by John Travolta transformed himself into a white-suited disco king each Saturday night. The movie's soundtrack sold millions of copies and spurred a wave of disco openings across the country and around the world. Fads and fashions. In addition to disco, the nation embraced many other fads during the 1970s. Americans, by the millions, bought T-shirts that bore personalized messages, while teenagers flew down suburban and city streets on skateboards. Obsessed with self-discovery, a number of Americans slipped mood rings on their fingers to get in touch with their innermost feelings. Supposedly, the ring's color changed to match the wearer's ever-changing mood. Blue, for example, signaled happiness and bliss, while gray denoted nervousness and anxiety. Meanwhile, millions of drivers bought Citizens Band or CB radios for their vehicles. This radio system allowed drivers to talk to each other over a two-way frequency within a range of a few miles. Many truck drivers installed the radios in an effort to warn each other of police and speed traps. Soon, however, average drivers had purchased them, mostly for entertainment purposes. Drivers adopted their own CB name or handle and talked to each other using CB jargon and code words. Fitness was another trend during the me decade, as many Americans turned to exercise to improve the way they felt and looked. One popular type of exercise in the 1970s was aerobics. Physician Kenneth H. Cooper popularized the exercise concept in his 1968 book, Aerobics. It was a way to achieve cardiovascular fitness without the drudgery and isolation that often accompanies physical exercise. This new way to stay fit while having fun and interacting socially with others quickly gained popularity. By the mid-1970s, men and women were dancing in gyms across the country. Running also attracted a wide following, as scores of Americans began pounding the pavement to stay fit and trim. In a testament to the popularity of running, athlete Jim Fix's work, The Complete Book of Running, was a bestseller following its publication in 1977. By the end of the 1970s, a number of these fads and trends began to fade. A decade in which Americans came to recognize their country's vulnerability and its limits had ended. As the new decade dawned, Americans looked forward to regaining confidence in their country and optimism in their own futures. Reading check. Examining. What was the impact of disco music on American society? Critical Thinking Skill Builder, Analyzing Secondary Sources. Why learn this skill? This textbook, like many other history books, is a secondary source. Secondary sources draw from primary sources to explain a topic. The value of a secondary source depends on how its author uses primary sources. Learning to analyze secondary sources will help you figure out whether those sources are presenting a complete and accurate picture of a topic or event. Learning the skill. To determine whether an author uses primary sources effectively, ask these questions. Are there references to primary sources in the text, footnotes, or acknowledgments? Who are the authors of the primary sources? What insights or biases might these people have? Is the information from the primary sources interwoven effectively to support or describe an event? Are different kinds of primary sources considered? Do they represent varied testimony? Is the interpretation of the primary sources sound and logical? Practicing the skill. In the following excerpt from The Cold War, 1945 to 1987, author Ralph B. Levering discusses President Carter's China policy. Carter sent his national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, to China to encourage better relations and thus put pressure on the Soviets. As you read, identify the primary sources Levering uses to make his argument. During his trip to Peking, Brzezinski did everything he could to please the Chinese leaders. He stressed repeatedly the evil nature of the Soviet Union. Upon his return, Brzezinski told a New York Times reporter that the trip was intended to underline the long-term strategic nature of the United States' relationship to China. Soviet leaders were deeply concerned. An editorial in Pravda on May 30, 1978, stated that Brzezinski stands before the world as an enemy of détente. Pravda also blamed China, stating on June 17 that Soviet-American confrontation is the cherished dream of Peking. On the whole, U.S. officials were not displeased by the Kremlin's anger and concern. Perhaps it would make Soviet leaders more anxious to conclude the SALT negotiations and more inclined to show restraint in the Third World. 1. What kind of primary source does Levering use twice in this passage? 2. Do you think this kind of primary source has any possible weaknesses? 3. Would the use of government documents strengthen the author's argument? Why or why not? Applying the skill. Analyzing secondary sources. Find and read an in-depth article in a newspaper. Then list the primary sources the article uses and analyze how reliable you think they are. Glencoe's Skill Builder Interactive Workbook CD-ROM Level 2 provides instruction and practice in key social studies skills.